So maybe we'll come back in 10 years or 15 years, but I don't want to lose half of my money. And I certainly don't want to wait 10 or 15 years to get even in nominal terms. Because I think the real value of I don't think there's any way of, Andy, I don't think there's any way avoiding a plunge in the purchasing power of your holdings of equities. Because I think they're going to drop in nominal terms, but if they don't drop in nominal terms that all that much, it's because they're going to plunge in real terms. In other words, what I'm saying is, I think the Federal Reserve, along with the Treasury, is going to destroy the purchasing power of the US dollar.
Michael Pinto, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
Good afternoon, Andy. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure talking with you. So it's interesting to me. I'm going to set this up with I've had, I don't know, four high profile guests, and I'll consider you in one of those high I'm one of those high profile guests, but really in the past 4 weeks that have all said we are in the biggest bubble ever. But I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to know where we're at with everything, and it's all seems to be hitting the fan, but yet equity prices seem to be relatively stable. So,
Yeah, isn't that the conundrum?
right.
So I've been saying that we've been in a massive, unprecedented, concurrent bubble, real estate, stocks, and fixed income bonds for years now. That's been the case for years. It's not a new phenomenon. Let's just talk about housing for a second. We have home prices. So let's just look at real estate. The most important metric to see if you're in a housing bubble is the home price to income ratio. So I'm not just looking at nominal home prices that are at a record. That doesn't tell you much at all. I mean, it does tell you the home prices are at a record high, but what are the prices in relation to incomes? Well, in relation to incomes, it's an all-time record high. It's never been this high before. Homeowner affordability is at a record low. And people say things like, mortgage writing standards are so much different now, and everybody has so much skin in the game. Well, not really. Have you looked at FHA secure loans? They have replaced the Ninja loans. There's been a tremendous amount, a ballooning of this 3.5% down types of mortgages, FHA loans. And if you look at speculation in the real estate market, for years and years after COVID, we've had home ownership going to people who didn't live in the home. So speculative properties have been 20 to 25% of all purchases, single family home purchases post-COVID. And that's because it was a great calculation. Hey, I could borrow money, I can get a mortgage at 2 or 3%, and I could buy a house, which is going up 20% per annum. That was the case, a few years ago, just a couple of years ago, actually. Real interest rates were a negative 8%. So let me take out a loan and buy a house. So you have investors own a tremendous amount of homes, and FHA secure loans have replaced the Ninja loans. And home prices are at an all-time record high relative to incomes. It's a massive housing bubble. There's just no denying that. And quickly, I'll just switch to the equity bubble. If you look at price to sales, total market cap of equities as a percentage of GDP, risk premiums are negative. These are all record high valuation metrics, higher than they've ever been before in history. And what makes it so unique is that you have bubbles in a existing at the same time, concurrently, in real estate and in equities and in credit too. If you look at things like, these business loans, buy now, pay later loans, private credit, through the roof, trillions of dollars. So, and it was all a function of the Federal Reserve falsifying the borrowing cost of money. So there's your three bubbles. They exist concurrently. They're going to burst. I have a model that lets me know when. I'm still net long the market. participating in these bubbles, but very much prepared to exit rapidly when I have to.
Yeah, so let me work out the home ownership bubble, if you would. I don't know if you're familiar with Melody Wright.
Sure.
I had her on the show just recently,
Well, good for
and
you. She's excellent.
she was phenomenal. And we talked about FHA, and this is really just substitute FHA for subprime.
Well, I just mentioned that. I mean, I didn't know she
Exactly.
said that. I didn't know she said that, but I mean, hey, don't believe me or Melody. You could look at a chart of the number of loans created by FHA. They have supplanted subprime. Absolutely.
Yeah. And this is not a prediction about the market direction, but she mentioned to me on the show that the housing market, the trouble is hitting right now. Well, actually, because of the laws, how they're written, October 1st. So that could be a huge drain on liquidity right there, unless they get a bailout. And I was reading on Zero Hedge that, what's that, Scott Bessent is already discussing about a homeowner bailout.
Bailing out FHA loans?
Yes, as
Oh,
of right.
well, Melody says that the housing bubble is going to hit some kind of watershed in October 1st, and that she might be right. But I live in Naples, Florida. One of my homes in Naples, Florida. I can tell you right now, it's already hitting. The poop is hitting the bed and the fan. Same time. The home prices here in Naples and some neighbors are down 20%
Already.
already.
Yeah.
So it's already hitting. I'm sure the same is some, everybody left the major cities post-COVID. I think Chicago, New York, and they came to Texas and Florida and North Carolina. So that's where those were the home prices doubled in a matter of a couple of years, and the fact that they're down 20% and probably have some more downside doesn't shouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah.
Just
And
unaffordable. Andy, it's just unaffordable. I mean, home ownership is at a record low, and it's not a function of interest rates, it's a function of price. And I haven't even mentioned to you about the cost of insurance and property taxes. So it's just not affordable, and the bubble will burst. It's gonna so there's two ways the bubble it, so if you believe in mean reversion and reconciliation of prices, there's only two ways it could happen. Home prices could stay where they are for many, many years, and incomes can catch up. And that you're talking about a decade or more of zero appreciation of home prices. And the same thing can be said for stock prices. Stock prices can stay where they are, and then GDP can catch up. Because I mentioned total market cap of equities to GDP is now well over 200%. The normal ratio there is under 100%. So home prices, sorry, equity prices are over two times the value of the US economy. That just doesn't happen. It's just not normal. And you can say, and there are people who dance and tap dance around that metric, but then what about the Case-Shiller PE? What about price to sales? What about risk premiums being negative? So you look at all the metrics together and create an index, and you can see that we are at a record high in prices in real estate and equities. And history shows that these assets don't correct nicely. It's not a gentle correction. They usually crash far below their average metrics. So I like to participate in that. My goal here is one of my goals here is to short the market around when it tops out. And I have a methodology behind that. I think the market could drop 30, 40, 50%. And then people will say in their dollar cost averaging target date fund, they'll say, well, the S&P always comes back. Well, maybe it does. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe we'll look more like Japan, and maybe it'll take 35 years, or China, where we're still waiting. We're still down about 40, 50% in the Shanghai composite index since 2007. So maybe it will come back in 10 years or 15 years, but I don't want to lose half of my money. And I certainly don't want to wait 10 or 15 years to get even in nominal terms. Because I think the real value of I don't think there's any way of, Andy, I don't think there's any way of avoiding a plunge in the purchasing power of your holdings of equities. Because I think they're going to drop in nominal terms, but if they don't drop in nominal terms that all that much, it's because they're going to plunge in real terms. In other words, what I'm saying is, I think the Federal Reserve, along with the Treasury, is going to destroy the purchasing power of the US dollar against assets.
So before I'd love to talk about your methodology, whatever you're willing to share. But before that, let's talk about that because it seems like the powers that be absolutely want the dollar lower, if you would, which is basically a monetary inflation, which is a tax on, it's really a tax on the middle class and the lower class, if you would, in regards to affordability. But talk to me about that because the dollar does seem to be rolling over. Do you expect more of that to come? And what exactly does that mean? Because I could see a situation where equity prices remain, and even home prices remain elevated. But as you just previously said, that can go on for years. And then you're looking at opportunity costs and having no appreciation in your portfolio or your real estate.
Well, shorting the Weimar German stock market post the World War I would have been a really bad idea, even though in actual purchasing power terms, it dropped, more than half. So what you're saying is the dollar is going to be destroyed. As a matter of fact, we could talk about the Federal Reserve a little bit,
Please.
his favorite subject. I mean, the gentleman who runs at the helm now,
Powell.
our Jerome Powell wants, they want to fire him, right? They want to
Right.
fire him. The administration wants him fired for gross negligence and being feckless. Not because he destroyed the value of the dollar, not because he increased the Fed's balance sheet by 104% since he took office in 2018. It's because he's not destroying the dollar fast enough. I mean, you can't make this up. And Powell's now saying, well, I'm gonna now because the labor market is clearly cracking, and I predicted this, so late 2024, I said 2025 GDP is gonna be very weak. And I said that the labor market was gonna crack. And the reason why I said this because I knew that Trump was gonna close, and I think rightfully so, close the immigration border down. So, you have for the first time in US history, immigration is negative. So if you were not born in this country, the number of that population is now negative or year over
Think
year.
about that.
So, and if you look at the fecundity rate of the United States, we're down to 0.5%, which happens to match the labor force. So the labor force is growing by 0.5%. And that includes the natural population growth and immigration right now. So, I mean, why are we surprised that the non-farm payroll report numbers are anemic? And I'm not a Pollyanna, so I'm not going to, so please don't think I'm saying this because I'm a perma bull. I'm just saying that the labor force numbers are weak and the economic growth is weak because half of GDP growth has been submarine. I mean, half of GDP the growth is the increase in the labor force growth. So it's productivity is one half. One arm of the sleeve, and the other sleeve is productivity growth and labor force growth. Those are the two ways you grow GDP. So productivity growth could be okay because of AI, but AI is also helping to reduce the number of hires. So I think what we're seeing now is a Fed that, and he proved this, Powell proved this conclusively post-COVID by printing $4.5 trillion in a matter of no time at all, right? Just because we had a virus, and he was actually buying, this is the most disgusting thing about it. I think it's just depraved, buying mortgage-backed securities up until March of 2022. After home prices were up 20% year over year, over year. Or, I mean, it was multiple years of 20% home price increase. And he still thought it was a good idea to buy mortgage-backed securities. So he blew up his balance sheet. The balance sheet went from $4.5 trillion to over $9 trillion. What's the Fed's balance sheet? That's the money they create by fiat, the credit, and they buy stuff with it. They buy mortgage bonds and treasuries. And the banking system's full of liquidity. What do they do? Go out and they buy more of the same stuff, and interest rates go to zero, and asset prices, are a discount to earnings. So if the interest rate is basically zero, then you could just make home equity prices and home prices infinite.
Right.
So this is what we're dealing with. And Powell said recently that he's ready to go now. He's convinced, looking at the figures from the non-farm payroll, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is a division of the Labor Department, the non-farm payroll report, he is now convinced now he's going to start slashing interest rates. So I think it could be 50. He could start with 50 on September 17th is when I think the meeting is. That's when the meeting announcement is. And I think it could be 50. And then we're going to go on from there, maybe one more cut before the end of the year. So I'm looking at maybe 75 basis points in cuts and then more in 2026. And then we get, Andy, we get the replacement of Jerome Powell,
Which will be friendly
so
to the administration.
who's going to be very administration friendly, who's going to even wreck the dollar at a faster pace. So, here's the thing. Inflation has, I mean, they say they have an inflation target. Well, first of all, let's just say in 1913, the Federal Reserve is put into existence, chartered by the Congress, and it was for stable prices. Now, I think stable prices would be an inflation rate of zero, right? Stable prices is zero. That was redefined after the Bernanke Fed. It's 2%, universally adopted by all central banks, that cabal of counterfeiters. So now it's 2%. So what I find very disturbing is that the inflation rate has been above 2% for 51 months in a row. So, I mean, if you have a target of 2% and you miss your target, you're above that target for 51 months. Andy, what would your reaction be? Would you say you're going to start cutting interest rates now, or would it be like, hey, at the very least, we should be keeping them where they are, but maybe even increasing the Fed funds rate because we're missing our target. The year-over-year target has been missed for 51 months in a row. But yet, because of this horrific numbers we're getting from the Labor Department, and then the misread, because they're Phillips Curve labor market economists that inhabit the Federal Open Market Committee, they're now saying, well, we're in a recession now. We're in this deep recession. Never mind the fact that asset prices are at a record high, that credit spreads are very tight, financial conditions are very easy. We're in a recession.
Right.
And we're going to slash interest rates. So that's what we're going to do. So if you don't have any inflation protection on your portfolio, you're gonna regret it.
Yeah. Well, let's go there. So what exactly, and I know the answers, but I want to hear from you. What exactly does, I don't know all the answers, obviously, but what is exactly does this mean? So they're going to be cutting. And specifically, it obviously means the dollar is going to more than likely roll over more. What does
But
it mean for the?
Andy, let me just stop you there a second. Just 1 second. The dollar is going to roll over. So when you look at the dollar, against what? So
Right.
there's two ways of measuring the dollar: against other flawed fiat currencies, or against hard assets like
Right.
gold, platinum, energy. So I have no doubt that the dollar's going to lose value against the latter. I'm not so sure if it's going to lose its value against the euro or the yen and the pound and the renminbi. But pop. Possible, quite likely it will, but definitely against energy and base metals and energy and precious metals for sure.
Right. It's all relative, and that's how I look at it. I don't look at it the dollar, if you will, relative to other currencies, because they're doing the same thing. The other central banks, if you would, they're doing the same thing because we're air quotes all on this together with an economic slowdown. But I'm interested in the bond market. The bond market's rallied here recently. It seems though if they crucify, if you would, the dollar, if they send that lower down, that's going to have severe implications on the bond market, but yet I guess maybe they can buy bonds as they did before.
Well, that's how rates go down. I mean, the Fed doesn't make an edict and say, I declare the Fed funds rate is going to drop by 25 basis points. Well, what they do is they print more money and
Right.
they shove it into the banking system with the primary dealers, and that supposedly is supposed to drag down the borrowing cost, the overnight interbank lending rate. That's how they get
Right.
it down. But when the Fed really went off the reservation is they went and said, well, let me see. I don't want to have a recession anymore, and I can't allow long-term rates to rise. So I think I'll just buy long-term treasuries, and I think I'll even buy corporate bonds. I'll even buy junk bonds if I have to.
Yeah.
I'll even buy mortgage-backed securities to make sure home prices don't fall. And I rescue, I save banks' balance sheets. That's what they really do. The Federal Reserve is in position to rescue banks. And if banks' assets, which are mortgage loans and corporate bonds and government bonds, they'll buy them all. They'll take them off their balance sheet. And now they have all this new capital. See, I think when we had, see, post the global financial crisis, circa 2007, 2008, so December 2007 to March of 09, to be specific. We had a lot of inflation on Wall Street because the Fed bought all the bad assets from banks, primarily mortgages, and that drove down interest rates. And of course, stocks went up and even home prices started to rise again, but didn't really hit Main Street that much. And the reason is that the deficit started to fall dramatically. The next time we have a recession, my prediction is that deficits will be around $5 trillion per annum. And that means they're already at 2. 1.2 is just interest payments. So if we have a recession now, and a recession is usually jump the deficit by 200%. So you might see, $5 trillion. In deficits, 4 to 5 trillion easily. And that means that the money is going to not stay on circle around the canyons of Wall Street. It's going to go right to the people again. It's going to be another form of helicopter money. Now, I'm not even saying they're not going to actually engage in another round of helicopter money. Who knows with these people? We're dealing with maniacs here who will do anything they can to prevent a depression, because that's how crazy things have gone. See, if asset prices were just a little bit out of whack and there wasn't a lot of leverage in the system, you could have a recession, a mild recession, and reconcile those imbalances. But as we saw in April 2nd, when Trump just said, we're having these Liberation Day tariffs, and that caused immediate chaos, complete chaos in the credit markets. And long-term yields began to spike, and the stock market dropped 15% in a few trading days. So if you want to let reality reign, you're talking about a 50% plus drop in those asset prices that banks hold. So banks would be going out of business left and right. And so we can't have it anymore. We have to do this. We're going to monetize trillions of dollars and probably new debt just because of the automatic stabilizers that they kick in. And then we might have another round of stimmy checks. It's really, I'm laughing and I shouldn't be. I'm laughing
No,
because
I know. I'm laughing too.
I'm actually pissed off. I'm really, because I own how, I mean, I'm thank God I'm very wealthy. And but I worry about the middle class has been eviscerated, Andy. And this is an institution that's supposed to be protecting these people. But they can't even afford a house anymore. And you look at if you look at quintiles, it's really only the top 20%, the top quintile that's really holding this economy together because of the bubbles and the asset prices. But look at the bottom four quintiles, especially as you get towards the sec first, second, and third, say the bottom 60%, they have nothing. They're not, they live paycheck to paycheck with just a few thousand dollars in the bank. That's a shame. You can't have a viable, healthy nation with such a bifurcation of living standards.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, and I see it. I see it in my own local community and also with my close community, with the friends that I talk to. And these people are professional. They do well, relatively speaking. It's all relative, but at the end of the month, they don't do relatively well, if you would.
No, it's trailer parks and so in Naples is a gorgeous community. It's like, you have country clubs and trailer parks and renters. I mean, it's just like, that's how it is. That's the country's becoming, the trailer parks and country clubs.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that way.
No.
I mean, if we had a manufacturing base, and I give Trump a lot of credit for this, when he started, he said, "Let me rebuild the middle class. Let me rebuild the manufacturing base. Let me stop sending pieces of paper overseas so that China owns all of our treasury debt." in Japan owned. I mean, I admire that. It's just it didn't hit him. It didn't occur to him the damage that needs to be done to get to that place. I mean, if you're gonna increase tariffs and onshore manufacturing here, you're gonna have to raise tariffs by 100% or more, and the economy just can't handle it. The U.S. economy can't handle it because it's just a highly over leveraged financialized economy. Just cannot handle higher interest rates. Can't.
Yeah, that's impossible. So I want to get to hard assets and your methodology, but before I do that, do you think this is by design, if you would? And I get it that that sounds conspiratorial, but I'm becoming more and more into that camp, if you would.
I don't think it, so I, not that I haven't thought about this, I could be wrong, Andy. I don't think it's nefarious. And how you define nefarious means evil. I think it's more arrogance and hubris.
Yeah.
It's about power. So maybe it's a little bit of a nefarity there. So people in charge thought, hey, we have a printing press. I want to maintain power. The way to do that is to give the people bread and circuses. This has been going on since Rome. So maybe that's the evil there. It's like, I need to maintain power. I need to run massive deficits. I need to make the people happy to keep my positioning. And then it gets to the point where you just can't stop, because if you stop, it's a steep depression. It's not a mild recession. I think that's where we are. So maybe it's a little bit of both. But now we're no matter who's in there, if they try to do the right thing, even if they elected me, who's completely unelectable,
I'd vote for you.
I would try to do the right thing, but I would caveat that with, hey, this is going to be really painful for a few years. But on the other end of this, we should have a stable economy with stable prices, a strong dollar, balanced budget, low taxes, low interest rates. I mean, it would be wonderful. It'd be nirvana. I mean, I actually wrote about this the way I don't want to take too much time because I know we're running out, but we could just abolish the Federal Reserve and just let the money supply grow commensurate with GDP, natural trend growth in GDP, which happens to be also around where the mine supply of gold is. So take say 2%, you could increase the base money supply by 2%, and then you wouldn't have any inflation, especially if you fetter the fractional reserve system. Tie that reserve system to the base money supply. So the loans would be fettered by the base money supply, which is also fettered by gold. So that would be wonderful. I don't hear anybody, I don't hear really anybody talking about that, but they should. But really, to get to that point, you would, I mean, you try to educate the public that, hey, most of you are going to lose your job, and it's going to be really rough. But once we get asset prices down to, I mean, you still have all the people, all the factories. Nothing's going to change. Only the asset prices are going to go down. So you have a lot of, it's the gales of creative destruction, Joseph Schopenhauer. I mean, they would be very violent for a while, but they would work. You have to let them happen. So you need a massive rebalancing of capital in the country. Actually, not just the country, it's the globe. All the developed world is all screwed up. Canada, Europe, Japan, China. Yeah, China, forget it.
Don't even get me started in Europe. They're imploding as we speak. And I have a lot of family in Europe. That being said, let's work out gold. Gold's been on just a tear, a rip. And oh, by the way, you sound like a true Austrian, if you would,
Thank you.
Austrian school.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No, you really do. You really
Well, I
do.
am. And I was one of the reasons why I became a money manager or got into this business. It's just fascinating to me.
Likewise.
I'm formerly a member of CNBC, Bloomberg, and all this. I was on there all the time. They threw me off. I don't know why they don't embrace Austrian economics. I mean, this is the real genuine economics, and it's been like thrown out because I think of hubris. I think we think because we have this technology, we could eliminate recessions. And I liken it to this, Andy, real quick. So it's like, when we have tectonic plates in the economy and in the earth. So if you allow earthquakes to occur once in a while, tremors, mild earthquakes, it prevents really big ones from happening, generally speaking. That they still do, but most of the time. But if you were had a way, you know, when you would if you use, you know, masking tape and balsa wood to try to keep tectonic plates from moving, eventually you're going to end up with a gigantic, massive one, and that's where we're headed for,
Yeah.
unfortunately.
No, I about that. This is a completely different topic, but I've watched you many times on CNBC and Bloomberg, and that's got me to reach you out. But funny, again, this is a different topic. Many of my guests are former guests on CNBC.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll name drop like the Mark Fabers of the world, if you would, and the Jim Robertsers of the world. I'm having Mark on tomorrow. They will
Wow.
no longer have them on, be as with you, just because of speaking truth. And it's interesting in our space, the digital space here, it's blowing up because people are getting truth, if you would, or at least I think there's more options out
Andy,
there.
I wrote a piece 2 weeks ago, which I thought it was like a, I don't say it's an opus magnum because it wasn't, but it was, you know, it's a short piece. So it was entitled "Fire the Fed." What was it entitled? Let me just see something I can pull up. I don't want to give you the wrong title. I think it was, yeah, "Fire the Entire Fed, Not Just Lisa Cook." And I thought it was a thought it was a really good piece. And a lot of places that I thought would carry it just didn't want to carry it. I don't think that I think they're so afraid of irking the powers that be that they won't carry it.
Yeah.
But
Send it to me. I'll publish it. We have a huge following now. I'll publish it. Send it to me.
right. Thank you, Andy.
But talk to me about gold. And this is just sound like a broken record. I mean, and really, silver's really caught on now. I mean, precious metals have just been screaming. Where's that coming from? Do you think the retail investors are finally starting to wake up, your people that you work with? Or is this primarily still central bank buying in a
I
big
think it's
decision?
too well. It's like you can't separate the two. Yes, of course, it's central bank buying. So I think it's two reasons. Number one is what happened with these tariffs, and even before that, with the confiscations and of whatnot of our creditor nations. So it, think about if I'm a foreign nation, China, Russia, India, whatever, and my trade surplus is going into US dollars and into the treasury market. And then the US says, you know, I don't like what you did. I'm going to impose sanctions on you and then confiscate your assets. That kind of thought process was going through a lot of foreign nations or creditor nations. And they said, you know what, I'm not gonna do that anymore. I'm going to, instead of taking my dollars and buying treasuries and have it and have them sit with you, I'm going to sell my dollars and buy gold. That's one leg of it. That's a big leg of it. And the other leg of it is, I think even domestically, people will understand where we're going. They're starting to understand that negative real interest rates is what we're going to have again. And it's going to be there forever. Or it's going to have a very forever, a very protracted existence of negative real interest rates and deficits. Debt and deficits are through the roof, and the only way you can get around them is to try to monetize, and I don't think it's going to be successful, but to try to monetize them away. So it's just an eschewment, eschewing the dollar and US debt, both domestically and globally, and into, I mean, I own gold for a very long time. I also have recently, over the last several months, have jumped on platinum. I think that's going a lot higher too. You know, platinum used to be a lot more expensive than gold. It's more durable and more rare than gold. So I don't know why it would be a lot less than gold. And that's not saying that gold is going to come down. I think platinum is going to go a lot higher. I also recently, and I mean very recently, as in today, jumped, no, I didn't say today. So I bought some energy, pure energy in today, but I've been long land that produces energy for even a longer time. Now I'm just buying the company. So I think that's the one asset I can find that has a very nice yield. Because you know, yields in money markets are going down dramatically in the next year. So I didn't say long-term rates, because that's the one of the reasons why I think the bubble could burst. That's probably one of the caveat. That's one of the catalysts, sorry, not caveat, catalysts that will pop the bubble. But I do like land producing energy assets.
You know, I'm glad
At
you
the
said
short end of
that.
the yield curve, sorry.
Right. That's okay. I'm glad you said that. And this is, I wasn't expecting, well, I would expect it because it's you and you're looking for value. but I wasn't expecting this conversation to take that turn. I love energy here just because of value relative, and more not only where I think it's going to go, but relative to just about everything else. Energy companies hasn't really moved.
Yeah, it hasn't moved. I mean, the PE ratios are very, very cheap. They're like 3% of the S&P. They used to be like 16% of the S&P. You need energy to run all this technology. I mean, I'm not going to just build massive amount of nuclear plants. So wind and solar aren't going to do it. So yeah, you need natural gas and you need fossil fuels. You need oil, and the yields there are huge. Hey,
They're
big time.
crazy good.
They're fat yields, which, in a world where you see the money markets are going to go down in yield, this is a nice, safe place to hide. I'm not saying you should go crazy, but yeah, have some energy. This is now the time to do it. I've avoided it for years and years, and I said, I can't do it anymore. Now I'm going to take a chance.
Well, I told that to my daughter who, through this journey of mine, she started her own portfolio. She's in her mid-20s, and I told her name is Casey, and I said, Casey, you can put this in a bank, a money market, a CD, whatever, at whatever percent, very small, or you can buy a handful of these stocks that are very safe, and you get 5 to 10%. What would you do? She was like, that was a no-brainer. She started gobbling up some energy companies. So let's talk about your methodology here. You mentioned you're not short the market. You participated in these up legs here. What exactly is your methodology? And when, I don't want to say, yeah, just explain that to me and what's going to give flash the danger signs for you.
So there's five sectors in the that I've identified in the economy, and I'm looking at the second derivative, the rate of change, or the rate of change of inflation and growth. So it goes all on sector one, which is deflation, disinflation, recession. That's when you want to be out of all the things that we're talking about right now, especially energies would do bad. Tech. You really just want to own short-term treasuries, maybe the dollar, and you want to short them. You want to short. You have to short the market in that scenario.
You're talking about a deflation, and not to interrupt you, but a very
Yeah. So
deflationary
yeah,
environment.
when you have deflation. And even a sharp disinflation. So the rate of change would be like, say we're at 5% inflation and we suddenly go to 1% inflation. That's disastrous for the market. And so I would be protecting assets at that juncture. But if you look at the other end of the spectrum, which would be sector five, which is more intractable inflation or hyperinflation, that requires a whole different set of things where you'd be shorting fixed income and you'd be really overloading energy and precious metals and base metals. So I'm not saying we're there yet, we're not, but that the real risk, the where I think we're going to end up is I think we're going to have stagflation like we've never seen before, like unimaginable rates of stagflation. You have a kind of anemic growth, but very high rates of inflation. So you want to be short bonds. And what I have a 20-point model. I'm looking at things like the copper to gold ratio. I'm looking at financial conditions index. I'm looking at credit spreads, some arcane things that let me know what the real economy is doing. So I don't panic. I'm not reading headlines. I want to know when the handful, I call it this cabal of like despots and autocrats, the plutocracy that really runs the world. When they use their billions, they know what's going to happen and they start acting. My model will pick up on what they're doing. I'll be able to get out and short before really most of this damage or a significant part of the damage is done. And the damage, I think, could be, as I said, extremely significant when it occurs. So for an example, you could say, well, what happens if the Fed starts cutting rates aggressively and the long end of the bond market just screams higher and you just hit a vacuum where the stock market just plunges? I think you can go lock limit down, by the way. I think you can trigger circuit breakers, 7%, 13%, or they just stop trading. I think something like that is likely to happen. A high probability of that happening. I don't know when. I can't tell you when. It's just not going to happen now. I can tell you that. The model says, hey, it's clear skies. It's blue skies right now. The only thing I won't just want to say when I say it's blue skies, given the valuation where we are, it's the risk reward is not there for you to be overly aggressively long, just like overly aggressively long Nvidia or tech stocks. I think that's insanity. But be net long like I am, but hey, energy, Some of the precious metals are really working well. Aerospace and defense has done very well. Some international stocks doing well. I got, Australia and Mexico, even India. I think India, even though everybody hates India now because of that trade, I think, who knows, one weekend we wake up and Modi and Trump signed a deal and this, it goes up 10% in one day. But the downside is, I think the downside is limited there. So those are the things I'm thinking about. I am long, about 25% long the stock market, net long. I have no real shorts in the portfolio. Lots of short-term treasuries. So we're safely participating in this bubble, safely. We're watching it closely, though.
Michael, if people want to do business with you, they want to learn more about you, how do they do that?
So the website is pentoport.com, and on it you can avail yourself to the midweek reality check, which is basically the most salient data of the week in my independent and objective analysis. If you are a U.S. citizen and you qualify for the portfolio, then I will directly manage your money in the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model portfolio strategy myself. I'll do that myself. That's where, I have a lot of my assets in there too.
Excellent. I'll put all of that in the show notes. And Michael, you weren't expecting me to say this, but I'll just talk to all my viewers and listeners. I have watched Michael on the CNBCs, if you would, out there. And I say that very liberally with all of the networks. And I've been a follower of Michael's, I don't know, for 2 decades, if not more. That's what originally attracted me to Michael, but off camera, and Michael has been extremely gracious to me, not only with his time, but also our interactions. I want to thank you for that, Michael, just coming on the show. Very gracious. And Michael, I had some big, high-profile people come on early on. Michael was one of the first. So you have my gratitude. I want to thank you so much for that and just help me get going. And it's been quite the journey. We've been blowing up. So if you, all my viewers and listeners, which is a huge following now, Michael's one of the good guys, somebody that I have an immense amount of respect for.
Well, I have a lot of respect for you, Andy, and I give you a lot of thanks for saying that, and may God continue to bless you with much success as you continue to help people through this difficult time that's approaching.
Absolutely. Thank you so, Michael, and I'll have you on whenever I can get you.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.